Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
630 Chad and the Edmonton Oilers Hockey Club present the show that is everything Oilers. Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Brought to you by World of Spas, Edmonton's number one hot tub and swim spa dealer. The ideal place to start your daily vacation on Oilers Radio. 630 Chad.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
82 games down, 16 wins to go for your Edmonton Oilers, and it gets going Monday on 630 Chad. Puck drops just after 8 o'clock Monday and Wednesday night. Round one between the Oilers and Kings. It's not Groundhog Day. It's just the third installment of a trilogy that Edmonton has taken the first two installments of. But that shouldn't lull you into a false sense of security. LA did not have the luxury of their best defenseman in Drew Doughty last year. And I don't think they had Victor Arvidsson either. Doughty played 25-47 a game in this regular season. So yeah, he's 34 years old, but it doesn't seem like his ability to impact a game is diminishing all that much. And how might that impact the Edmonton Oilers? Or will they simply overpower what LA has? Because offensively, there is a big difference between these two clubs. Big time. And Edmonton did win the season series 3-1. One of those needing overtime, but 3-1 overall. John Shannon coming up a little later on here in hour number two. And in just a couple of minutes, we'll play the conversation that Bob had with Marty McSorley. Stauff is on his way to Grand Prairie today for tuning in a little bit late. But of course, we'll be back to preview everything on Monday afternoon. Our show hours expand a little bit. So a 2-hour game day show followed by a 2-hour face-off show. So you have 4 hours basically of a pregame before each playoff, and on a non-game day we've got 3 hours of Oilers Now, so we'll go an extra hour for you there. And why not? I mean, there's no shortage of things around the league to talk about. Other series in the West, we didn't really go over this in the first. I assume that if you have access to a radio, you probably can use the internet. And if you can use the internet, you probably know what the other matchups are. But it's Dallas and Vegas. Winnipeg and Colorado will be certainly, that might be the series of the first round. Maybe the Battle of Florida could be too. But Vancouver and Nashville, that one's a pick 'em. And you might be saying, well, how could it be a pick 'em? That's a division-leading team in the Canucks. Yeah, but they played to the same projected points percentage, really, from a certain point in the season. I'm trying to remember where that was pinpointed. I should have written that down instead of going off the top of my head. But essentially, Nashville turned it on to the tune of 109-point pace. And Vancouver finished with 109 points. So get a coin and flip it. All right. I will not make you wait any longer. Well, actually, I'm going to, because I got to tell you that some guests of the show do receive gift cards to Japanese Village. Save $10 on all certified Angus beef New York steak dinners. For details, visit jvedmonton.ca. Throwback Friday it is, and instead of George LaRocque, we're gonna go a little bit before George's time. I guess they spent some time together in the NHL, but let's change it up with Marty McSorley joining Bob on a Throwback Friday for Conlon Motorsports. They'll help you get out there. Visit one of four Conlon Motorsports locations across Alberta or head online to conlonmotorsports.ca. Stoff and Marty.
Well, today on Throwback Friday, a real special opportunity. We're going to talk to one of the legendary enforcers in NHL history, Bob Stauffer, here with Marty McSorley. Marty, great to see you. You were a guy who, for a while, you were a guy the Oilers fans loved, and then for a while, you were a guy the Oilers fans hated. But you had quite an evolution. Maybe just talk a bit about, look, this show's called Oilers Now. You ended up winning you're on the 87 and 88 teams in Edmonton, winning back-to-back Stanley Cups. You're involved in the biggest trade in NHL history. But take us through your growth and development with the Oilers organization.
Well, I was so fortunate. I came from a not a very good situation for young players in Pittsburgh. We earned the right to draft Mario Lemieux, so that tells you how we finished there. Yeah. And they went through a lot of young guys. Well, I got traded to Edmonton, and they'd already won two Stanley Cups, and it's easy to think, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to play for that team? How am I going to make that hockey team? And I walked into a wonderful situation with wonderful people. I mean, the guys on that team were great, great players, but they were even better people. And I do think that Glenn Sather and John Muckler and Teddy Green were cheering for me to do well. So every day I brought that to the rink, that I'm gonna treat this like a fantasy camp in hockey school. And when you got Yari Curry that says, Matis, come here, I teaches you something, right? Yeah. Or Mess would talk to me about skating and playing and how to take the puck to the net out of the corner. And Koff would talk to me about don't let the boards be your hindrance and always cut back out to the open ice. And there was in the practice, Slatt sometimes would practice me with Mark Messier and Glenn Anderson, and I would just practice with them. The next game I'd be back with Krushelinski or McTavish, and it was so awesome because, again, a hockey school fantasy camp. But what I learned to do in Edmonton, I think, was almost like an analytics at the time, where I knew we had Gretzky's line and Messier's line and those. If I can get the puck in another team's end, if I can give us momentum, and what started to develop was, like, I'd look back at Glenn after we had a penalty. He'd put us on the ice, and we'd get the puck from our end into the other team's end. We might get the puck into the crease. We might get a couple hits on the defenseman. And now Gretz and Mess start offense right away. So I think that a momentum builder in the game, and there's times, too, when we'd be on the road, we could go out and make a presence. Let them know that we're out there, that we can get to you guys if we need to. You're going to leave Messier, Gretzky, Curry, and those guys alone. And that development with the guys and with the coaching staff for me was I got a chance to play defense all through the 88 playoffs, which was I played with Charlie Huddy, who was a great, great player. So it was I got a chance to learn how to be an NHL player and how to be an everyday automatic NHL player.
Well, you're also one of the toughest players in NHL history. And I think of, you guys played Detroit in 87 and 88, and Kevin McClellan was on the team at center. Maybe pound for pound, arguably the toughest Oiler of all time. A real good lefty. Sammy by that point was gone, but, you guys were sort of the next wave. And it was part of the game back then, as well. As much as you focus on the growth and development as a player, but specific to the Battle of Alberta. Like, it was once said that if you didn't fight, you didn't want to be that guy in the Battle of Alberta. Do you just look back and kind of shake your head at those times now? Like, thinking, like, today guys would have got a bunch of 10-game suspensions for the stuff that was ordinary. And I, of course, remember in 88 when you swept Calgary, you got all of Mike Bullard, and he didn't take that very well. But it was a fun time, wasn't it?
Oh, boy, it was great. And it didn't take me long to realize the importance of those games, because all you need to do is to be around guys like Mess. And you knew how important those games were and how big the games were. And then you started to realize those are games I have to have. My presence needs to be felt. I need to be able to get out there, and I need to be able to play a quality regular shift in my own mind and earn that every shift. And so, you know it's going to be a battle. Like, Calgary was so well-respected around the league.
They're a good team.
In 1988, there was Edmonton media that picked Calgary to beat us out and win Stanley Cup because they were first overall in the league during the regular season. And, you know, when we swept them in that, it just, it also showed, too, that, you know, your guys like Yari and Wayne and the great players, when they rise up in the big moments. And I learned how to lead from those guys. You learn how to be a winner from those guys, and you try to take that with you the rest of your career.
You scored two goals in game five at Edmonton in 87, and the Oilers were up 3-1 going into the third period. Philly came back. They maybe took a moment away from you because you would have been, but what did it mean? Because if I recall correctly, I think your dad ended up on the ice after the team won the 87 Cup, and they handed it to Steve Smith after what had happened the year before. How awesome was that first Stanley Cup for you personally?
Oh, my God. You know, when I just remember kind of being on the bench, and Sparky Kulchiski came to me and he goes, I need your helmet and your gloves, but you're so wrapped up in the game and the play game is going on and you're so fired up and focused. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he points up to the clock and there was like 23 seconds left in the game. And Glenn Anderson had scored a huge goal for us to put us up 3-1 in that game. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm actually going to be a winner of the Stanley Cup. And it's almost like you're lost. Because it's almost surreal. And then when my dad couldn't sit in the stands, he was too nervous. The guys, the security guards were great, and the guys that worked in Northlands, he would walk around under the stands. So when they opened the doors and rolled out the red carpet, my dad came to the ice, and I brought him out, and I remember saying to him and saying, "We got our name on the Stanley Cup," you know, because it is so Hockey Night in Canada, and every Saturday night as a kid growing up, and you know, every year you watch the Stanley Cup getting raised, and it's almost bigger than life.
We're joined by Marty McSorley. It is Throwback Fridays for Connell Motorsports. Bob Stauffer with you. All right, Marty, look, you're involved in the biggest trade in NHL history. Mike Krusilinski's only used the line 8,433 times. He was the key to that Gretzky trade. But to put you guys in a position, geez, it was just a couple days ago, it was the 25th anniversary of the Kings coming back from 3-1 down and beating the Oilers. I think that was on April the 15th, beating Edmonton in Game 7, but became a nasty rivalry between Edmonton and LA. Your role changed. Like, you went from sort of a swing guy for the Oilers, forward, a support forward, third, fourth line forward, or a third pairing deep. You became a top four defenseman in LA. I'm an Edmonton guy. I was like, come on, step up, fight the heavies. But you played huge minutes for the Kings, didn't you?
Well, the one year, I think the Player Association told me they thought I played the most minutes in the whole league. Which I wanted. You want to push, drive, and desire more and more and more. It's what I learned in Edmonton that I was able to take and then start to utilize. I was fortunate enough in 1991 that Larry Robinson came to the Kings.
Well, favorite defenseman of all time.
And was in my year. And that was the year I won the plus-minus in the league. But Larry was a big, big part of that. So I continued to learn from great players, but you try to implement it. LA needed more from me. They needed more minutes. They needed me to play against the good players. Sometimes maybe I tried to be a little more offensive than I should have been, because I think that from a big minute plus minus defensive specialist, I think sometimes people don't want to maybe accept that role, but that's a huge role. And in LA, I really think we were a general manager away from winning the Stanley Cup. Because there was a couple of trades. Like, we could have traded Robitaille for Joe Sakic in 1991 and they wouldn't make the deal, the Kings. And so there was things that went on in LA, but we were competing against Edmonton and Calgary. We beat Edmonton out in 89.
They got you the next 3 years.
Calgary wins the Stanley Cup that year. They beat us out. And then in 1990, we beat Calgary out, who'd finished first overall in the NHL. And then we play Edmonton and we lose to them and they win the Stanley Cup. Our division, to get out of our division was a battle. It was a war.
Yeah. Speaking of war, people think of you and they think, like, you're certainly one of the greatest endurance fighters of all time. I think you, and I respect how much you improved as a player, but I think you may have had the best fight in NHL history. So when you were in Pittsburgh, in a bizarre scenario where you got traded for McEachran, and then the two teams made the trade back, but you went toe-to-toe with Proby when Proby was at the absolute height of his power. I mean, that, and just the respect for that the two of you guys had for each other. I mean,
mean, he could go. I mean, he was as tough as there was.
Well, Proby absolutely was as tough as anybody. He was also a really good hockey player.
I know.
Remember Glenn Sather getting flack because he put Proby in the All-Star game?
I know.
Bob Probert deserved to be in the All-Star game.
29 goals, really 60 points 1 year.
And the room he gave that hockey team,
yeah,
right? He earned it. But so to my fight against Proby, like people, you got to, the two fights that people talk about the most both happened on the East Coast. And when I worked at Rogers, I would come downstairs at 11 o'clock at night after our show and see that most people have gone home. Well, the games on the West Coast are just getting started,
right,
and there's so many great things that go on,
yeah,
on those games out there that I think all those years in Edmonton, L.A., and even in San Jose, there were so many big hockey moments that didn't get seen around the NHL. So, I mean, I had fights against guys like Sandy McCarthy and Stu Grimson. And
yeah, a couple long ones with Louis, a couple two-minute fights with Louis.
But I'm not sure if the people on the East Coast ever saw them.
Yeah.
Right. And so in the West was a lot tougher than the East. There was a lot more of the big guys. And I think because Proby was there and then Stu Grimson came out and Dave Brown then came to Edmonton. So the big guys, Jimmy Kite was in Winnipeg. The West seemed to have the big guys. Semenko, obviously, who was great to me.
Yeah.
I know Semenko, God bless him, was great. I learned a ton from Semenko. I learned how to be a tough guy on a good hockey team from Dave Semenko.
One final one for you. Let's get to the here and now of the game. We are watching, in my opinion, the single most advanced player ever. We've never seen a guy this fast, this skilled. Like, and look, I have nothing but the utmost respect for Wayne. I know how loyal of a friend Wayne's been to you over the years. Wayne treats everybody fantastic. Even Wayne would sit there and say, holy, this guy can do it. It's pretty special to watch Connor on a nightly basis, isn't it?
You know, I've told a number of people here in Phoenix, I'm like, you have to go watch Connor McDavid. You may not get another chance to do it, right? And because the first game I saw Connor McDavid was his first exhibition game in Saskatoon. And I was there with Scotiabank.
Yeah.
You know, we were on a big charity event, 200 kids having an opportunity. And somebody said to me, are you okay? It was near the end of the first period.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm sitting on the edge of my seat and I'm like, am I really watching what I'm seeing?
Yeah.
I mean, he is so special. The fans in Edmonton are really, really fortunate because this guy is so special. It, to me, it's like watching Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It just, there's times he does things, and his work ethic, and when you hear about the stories behind the scenes, his preparation for the game and how he prepares to be a great player. Gary Roberts and I have talked at length, and Gary trains with Connor in the summertime, and he's a huge, huge fan of Connor. The game's in really good hands. When you look at Sidney Crosby and you look at Connor McDavid and you look at the McKinnon, these quality, these young guys, the game's in a really, really good place, Bob, and I'm really, really fortunate that I can be a fan and go watch these guys.
Marty, thank you for joining us on Oilers Now.
Well, you know what? Playoffs. Exciting times. I'm looking forward to it. You know, cheering for my Oilers, and I've got some guys in the Kings and whatever, and you really want them to do well. And if they meet in the finals of the Western Conference, I'll be a happy man.
All right. Great stuff. Thanks, Marty.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There you go. It's Marty McSorley joining us. He's our headliner today, brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky. It's the best you've ever tasted. Search for WILHAUK today. Keep those texts coming at 780-496-0063 on the Ashley Fine Floors text line. Going over some of your highlights from the Oilers' regular season. Getting set to drop the puck on game 83 on Monday evening. Got the injury reports still to come. And yeah, I guess we'll tell you about a big day today at Brent Ridge Ford when we get back after this.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.
Stoffers in Grand Prairie. We got Brendan Escott for the next 35 minutes. John Shannon is coming up after a Global News weather traffic update. Let's get to your injury report brought to you by James H. Brown Injury Lawyers. When accidents happen, go to jameshbrown.com. Oilers are just, I think they were playing it safe with Evander Kane's injury there. Took a bit of a nick late in the season. Missed a couple games to get things back right, but I expect that he'll be in the lineup on Monday night. As far as Los Angeles goes, Carl Grundstrom has been out on the long-term injured reserve since mid-February, and goaltender Phoenix Copley tore his ACL and was deemed out for the season in mid-December. So that leads me to a question here on the Ashley Fine Floors text line from Craig. Who played goal for the Kings this season? I thought Talbot was backup to somebody. Was it Quick? It was David Riddick to end the season. So the tandem going into this series for the Kings is 36-year-old Cam Talbot and 31-year-old David Riddick. Numbers this year were not terrible, but keeping in mind this is a pretty astute defensive team in front of them, and they play a real defensive-oriented style of game. But the regular season numbers for Cam Talbot this year, he had a 9.13 save percentage, 27 wins. David Riddick was a little more prominent toward the end of the season. He finished with a 9.21 save percentage. So those are a couple numbers that aren't that bad. Typically, if you're up over 900, 905, you're happy. But that's an awfully tall task in terms of shutting down Edmonton's offense. So bear that in mind as well. Hey, it's a big day for our friends at Brentridge Ford in Wetaskiwin today because it was the last of their Calgary Flames fans retiring. This would be it for Chris Harquail, and all the best to you from us and from your friends at Brentridge, Uncle Milt, Rich, Johnny, and the team. Don't worry, all those guys are Oilers fans, so it sounds like the building has been cleansed now. But Chris, all the best to you and to your Flames next year, I suppose. For fair and open vehicle ownership, call 780-352-6048. Brentridge Ford on the Auto Mile in Wetaskiwin. John Shannon's coming up. So too is Reed Wilkins. We're going to mix in a prospect report for Reface Magic. All of that coming up after a Global News weather traffic update.